Hello, everyone, and welcome to So What Happens Next, Small Screens. I am one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
I'm Allie.
And I'm Gio.
And this week, we are continuing our just too damn cold January marathon with the prequel, reboot, sequel, movie to The Thing, titled The Thing from 2011.
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You ready to talk some reboot time here?
I am.
Yeah?
Yeah, I have a lot to say about it.
I might have more to say about this movie than I do with...
Yeah.
Than the other movie.
I was actually talking about this movie with people at work because... Okay, so for Christmas, our friends decide to gift us the Thing game, board game, which requires like 4 to 8 players, I think. So we can't play it with just the two of us, unfortunately. But the concept of the thing, it's like literally Among Us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's Among Us, the board game.
Yeah. But I think it's even worse than that because it's literally like, oh, you get assimilated.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't actually looked at the box, so I don't know if that happened. Like, can you be assimilated? Like, how do you keep that secret? We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. But anyways, that also brought the conversation to this movie, which, again, I have a lot to say about it.
Don't tell me somebody said they like it more.
No, thankfully not. Oof. It's like, oh, it was nice knowing you. Bye. Yeah. Like,
your friendship has ended.
Well, I'll just get going early then. No, I'm just kidding.
Uh-oh.
But as you can hear, joining us in the studio virtually today is none other than Gio and Allie once again to talk some more thingage. Gio, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for asking. How are you?
Doing all right. It's a lot warmer as we record this. And watch, like, on Tuesday when this episode goes up, it's going to be like -2 degrees. So
yeah, it won't matter, or it's going to be 60 degrees. And it's like, oh, welcome to global warming, everyone.
The whole month just goes in the garbage. The theme's ruined. But also joining us today, Allie, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm good.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You guys are, sounds like from when you were talking before, you guys aren't dealing too much with the cold yet, at least. Are you guys ready to talk some things here? Some new rebooted things?
Indeed, ready to talk about things.
Oh, yes. Stuff and things.
Yeah, but I hope everybody can remember all the names because this one is a doozy.
This is a doozy.
That was the thing when I was talking with other people about the first one. I was like, oh, yeah, I know all their names. Like, you got MacReady, you got Childs, and, like, everybody knew who I was talking about. And then this one, I'm just like, Heinrich? Like,
yeah, everyone's Heinrich. That's
everyone is Heinrich.
There's no squid fingers here.
I think there's a Lars in there.
There's at least one Lars because they yell Lars a lot. But yeah, let's get into this movie. So this movie is a... How would you describe this? This is a reboot. I mean, this is like a reboot, remake, prequel all at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, it reboots the non-existent franchise of The Thing for the modern day. It prequels the 1982 film by explaining what was going on at the Norwegian camp that they find there. And I might be the only person in the room that knows this, but it is a remake, sort of the original Thing titled The Thing from Outer Space. Did you guys know that John Carpenter's Thing was not the first The Thing to ever be made?
Yes.
Not until you told me. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was originally called The Thing from Outer Space. I believe it's from 1954. Huh.
It was the 50s it's sometime, not, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely not the same movie. There's not this assimilation factor. I think it's like a plant monster or something. I haven't seen it in years. I watched it once. It's a B movie. Like, it's not this what is considered like high horror art type thing. Yeah. It was just a B movie that took place in the Arctic. But surprisingly, Gio, have you seen it? Have you watched the movie?
I haven't, but I researched it a little bit after getting more invested in the original movie. If I'm not mistaken, they kind of had to remove the assimilation element just because they didn't have the effects for it at the time. So they kind of rewrote the story around that.
Yeah, it weirdly follows a similar aesthetic. Like, the plant monster uses vines and shit, so you kind of get the tentacles and crap. But yeah, there's none of this assimilation thing. But I will say, weirdly enough, this film, the 2011 thing, follows a lot of interesting story beats that I at least remember from that 50s version, like the scientist making sure no one kills it and all this other stuff. It's just, I would argue that the B movie from the 50s might have nailed it a little better.
You like jazz?
In some respects. But other than that, we mentioned the names of this movie all over the place. This movie, like I said, is from 2011. It was directed by, and I am going to butcher this man's name, Matthias. I'm going to say it as well as I can. So it has Matthias with a J, Van Hangingen with a J in there, a couple N's, Junior. So Mr. Hangingen.
I think you got the Junior part right.
I definitely got the Van and the Junior, but it might be Vaughn, so I'm not really sure how. So you're right, I got that. It stars Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Previous episode, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. She played Ramona Flowers. Joel Edgerton.
Owen! Andrew!
Of Star Wars Episode 3 fame.
Uncle
he played
Owen.
Uncle Owen. I guess Star Wars Episode 2. He's in there too for like 5 seconds.
He was in that.
It's the only thing I know him from. Amber's like, he's in this and that and the other thing. And I'm like, the only one I ever remember is the Star Wars prequels. And it took me like Googling him after I saw him in something, probably this, to be like, what else is he in? And I like look it up and I'm like, oh, motherfucker's a Star Wars. It's like, oh, Uncle Owen. Like, what the fuck? Like, fuck that guy. Uncle Owen. All my homies hate Uncle Owen. Like, screw that shit.
Fucking guy.
And then another, God, butcher of a name I'm going to do. For you Game of Thrones fans out there, this also has Christopher Hivju.
The big woman still here?
He played the, like, red-bearded wildling. Big guy.
Tormund.
Tormund.
He was also recently in The Witcher.
He was also recently in The Witcher season 2.
Don't spoil that.
Jeffrey hasn't seen it yet.
Sorry.
It's okay. It doesn't spoil anything. He's just in it.
Yeah, he's just,
you should be excited to see him in there. I liked seeing him in this movie. That was cool.
I did too. I had the same exact reaction in this movie that I did when we were watching The Witcher. And I was like, wait, that guy's familiar.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh yeah, that's him. Like, he's just fun.
The Sportos, Motorheads, Geeks, Sluts, Bloods, Wastoids, Dweebies, Dickheads. They all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
This movie has also a ton of other Norwegian people whose names I'm just going to destroy, both their character and their actual real names. So apologies in advance. And also spoilers in advance for this film. You know, because that's what we do with small screens. We talk about things we've already seen, and we figure you've already seen them too. So, Allie, haven't heard from you in a second. Let's start with you. Is this the first time you've seen this movie? Have you seen this movie before?
No, I hadn't. I watched it right after we finished talking about the original thing.
Disappointed!
Okay, it wasn't as bad as I was expecting it to be. There were some things about it that I liked, but, like, I think they took it from 0 to 100 too quickly. That was kind of jarring. Like, they made it seem like, the beginning up until the part where the alien breaks out of the ice was all kind of like a slow burn type feel, which I really liked. But then all of a sudden the alien busts out of the ice and then it's like shit hits the fan and then we're at 100, like everything's going to shit. And I felt like that was too drastic. And I also think it was too, like, there were a lot of plot aspects that were almost the same as the original, but then they were like slightly different, and it was just like a weird, like, it's exactly what you said, like, it wasn't a remake, but it also kind of wasn't a prequel.
Yeah,
so like that threw me off. I don't know.
Yeah,
those are my initial thoughts.
That's a solid, I think, initial way to put it. Is it's very like, because I was kind of thinking this on this rewatch, I was kind of thinking something similar. I was like, you know what, this movie is not as bad. Like, we'll get to it, obviously, we start talking about it, but like the setup in the beginning with like Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character Kate and like who she is and when this movie takes place and like kind of the mystery of what's going on, like, it's working. I have some gripes being an archaeologist as to why he would entice her with a structure when she's a paleontologist, but we can bitch and moan about that later. But yeah, I think it sets itself up pretty nicely, and you're right, there's kind of like a, it's almost following like a similar pacing to Carpenter's movie where it's like this slower burn of like what's going on, and then I think it tries to do like that peak, like it tries to do like what the dog scene in Carpenter is, like that sudden like holy shit, what the fuck, and then like off to the movie we go, whereas in this one it kind of tries to do a peak and then it dials itself back because you realize they don't know it can assimilate things yet, so it's just a monster, and like it doesn't pace right because it goes up and then goes immediately back to zero when they think they killed it.
Yeah.
Snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap.
Some plot whiplash there, I think. But Gio, this is your first watching of this movie.
Less than 24 hours off of my initial
viewing. Yeah. you watched it the most recent, I think, because we did the same thing, I think, that you did, Allie, or at least within a day of it. We watched it, like, the very next day afterwards. But Gio here finished it, like, what, like 10 hours ago? Like, or something
not
like
that. Not
that
recently. I finished it, what, like 18 hours ago?
Yeah. So it's so fresh, and you've had dreams about it. It was so soon. So what are your thoughts, initial thoughts about this movie before we dive in?
I would agree 100% with almost everything Ali said, in that there were things I liked about it, and I didn't like dislike it. I would agree with the pacing, though. Let's say, I feel like this one tried to be a little bit too much of a creature feature compared to the original one, where the original one built more of its suspense around the atmosphere. This one focuses more on like the monster itself and all that. And yeah, it definitely jumps from 0 to 100 too quickly. I actually found the escape from the ice block sequence a little bit comical in a bad way.
Oh, God.
But yeah, I think I'll, for like, I've got a lot of like positives and negatives that I've been thinking about that I think I'll elaborate on more as we go through. But circling back to the characterization and not being able to remember names, I think that's because a lot of it they didn't really build up the characters as well as individuals as they did in the original. So it's a little bit easier to forget their names. Also, some of it, of course, could have to do with the fact that we're native English speakers and their Norwegian names, so maybe that makes it harder too. Although they did have like names like Knolls and Windows and things like that in the original, so it's not exactly common English names either, but
well, that was actually something, so just a quick piece of trivia for this one, that was actually something, the like original draft of this movie was like, it was all Norwegian people, because why the hell would there be American people at this Norwegian base? And the studio was like, there's no way Americans would watch a movie full of Norwegian people. And I'm just
I was thinking that as I was watching it. I was like, this had to be like a studio kind of like catering to an American audience thing to have the American characters in there at all.
Right. Like, why are you shoving all these Americans into this this Norwegian base? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny because we watched, what was it? the movie with what's his name, Mads Mikkelsen, where he's drinking.
Oh, Druk.
Yeah, Druk.
Yeah,
I don't think that's Norway. That's Scandinavian. I don't think it's
Scandinavian.
But that movie was all in some like Finland. Yeah, it's or like something. Yeah,
one I watched more that. Round I love that or movie. Something like that. That's the translation.
Yeah.
Yeah, another round.
Yeah, another round. That's it. That movie was fantastic, and that was all in Scandinavian languages. Mm-hmm. So like, fuck, I'd watch a whole Scandinavian The Thing. It'd be more immersive, I guess. I don't understand what's going on.
A few of the main characters in this movie that were developed better, I think actually did do a decent job of standing out on their own from the originals and not being carbon copies in that regard. So I appreciate that.
I agree.
No, like I said, I liked the way some of the characters went. I liked some of the dynamics they played with between the characters, and then some they just kind of dropped. And again, I could see like Studio Fingers getting into that one.
Mm-hmm.
Like my big thing is like, okay, so we got Mary Elizabeth Winstead's friend in the beginning of the movie. You kind of get this implication like him and Mary Elizabeth Winstead are like friends, and like they're gonna be more of a duo in this movie, maybe even like a romantic coupling. And then that's just like, nah, she's gonna hang out with Joel Edgerton more, and then that's not really gonna go anywhere. It just feels like two halves of a like a dynamic, whether romantic or not, that like it's with two different characters, so neither one ever takes off the ground, and it's just like, ah, okay, like whatever, it just fizzles.
I saw that going differently in my mind.
But Amber, last but not least, initial thoughts on this movie. You mentioned you have a few, but just before we get into the plot, you know, what are your thoughts on The Thing 2011?
Yeah, the characters are like super not memorable, like the first one. Like the first one, like each one like had their own, like I don't know how to describe it, but like they were like their own person, and they all had like their own issues, which is like what made the film so good, because it wasn't just about the creature, like Gio was saying, but it was about the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And you could see which characters got along really well with each other, and then which characters did not get along well with each other, which obviously created like conflict within the film. And in this one, the only conflict really was between Ramona and then the other Dr. Dude.
Ramona.
That,
Ramona.
Yeah.
That's
how I'm gonna
Kate. Is her character's name is Kate?
Yeah.
You call her Ramona.
She ended up becoming a paleontologist, you know.
Yeah. Her and Scott ran off, and then that's a thing. She ran off to like Colorado or whatever, and then became a paleontologist, and Scott, I guess, just died.
But anyways, like that's the only between her and the guy who asked her to come out and look at this like archaeological site or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, he has a name. Dr. Sander Halvorsen.
Ah.
Played by Ulrich
von Lichtenstein!
Thompson.
Okay.
But fun fact about him, that actor replaced the original actor who played Dr. Halvorsen. And in the beginning of this movie, they had to CG this guy's face onto the other guy's body.
Oh, that's weird.
And I always knew, because at the beginning, I was always like, man, he looks kind of funny, but like, whatever, maybe it's just the lighting.
Yeah.
It's apparently they CG'd his face on there.
Oh, Jesus.
And I'm like, why not just fucking reshoot it? It's one scene, just reshoot it.
That can't have cost much less than just reshooting it, or if any at all.
As we'll find out, CGing over things that would have been better is like the MO of this film. Like just to preface it, every creature interaction you guys see in this movie, pretty much with the exception of the one at the end, I think, maybe not, but pretty much every interaction was a practical effect done, filmed, just needed to be post edited. And the studio was like, nah, that looks like an 80s movie. Fuck that. Make it CGI. And did the cheapest, fastest CGI they could to recreate the phenomenally well-done practical effects that were done for this movie. I mean, they're on par with the Carpenter film. If you go look it up on YouTube, it looks amazing. And then it's just like, nah, fuck that. And they just literally... So what you see is they took the actual thing, CG'd it away. You know, they filled it. They content aware filled it for you guys that use like Adobe and shit. Nice. And then they CG'd over it the exact same thing, but shittier. And over the course of like 3 months. So
that's so interesting, because Cayman and I, when we were watching it, we were actually wondering like, oh, is that like, is that practical effects or is that CGI? Like
some
in
is.
Some spots.
I think the there's like a scene where the guy gets his arm on his, the arm monster on his face. I think some of that's practical. And I think at the beginning, there's some practical stuff. Like the very beginning when they find it under the shed, that had to be practical. Because I said the same thing. But anyway, character interactions like her and Dr. Halvorsen. Yeah, I mean, I found it kind of cringy in the beginning, to be honest.
Like, yeah.
I'll have to go back and look at the opening scene again.
I know. It's one of those things where you don't... It's like blink and you miss it because they do it so quick, but...
I was too busy fiddling with subtitles at the very beginning because it was all in Norwegian.
Oh, yeah.
Probably didn't notice it.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Not to mention that useless, like, intro in the beginning with the story. You guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Wait, story? What?
The two story. Guys talking about, like, he's telling
me.
A joke.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Well, let's, you know what? That's a great... segues are amazing. This week's segues are working out for us. Well, it was... Let's get into it. This is the movie. This is the opening of the movie. Is these guys are all rolling in a snowcat. It's three guys. And it wasn't so much... Like, the story... It's not that it's a bad scene. Like, it's basically the discovery of the spaceship, right? Is this opening scene. And you got this nerdy guy in the back who's, like, looking on the computer, following some kind of signal.
He's listening.
And it's... Yeah, he's listening to, like what I guess is a distress call or something, essentially.
Oh, it's... I think it's magnetic or something like that.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, sounds like a... Yeah.
But he's listening to it, and you got these two other guys. One guy's driving, one guy's talking, and they're talking to this joke. And maybe we've just seen the movie too much. But this joke just does not do it for me. And it takes so fucking long to get to the punchline, which I think is what Amber's getting at. Is it's just like we're watching them and we're not watching them really do anything. It's just them telling this joke in Norwegian to one another. So you're really reading this joke. So I feel like there might be something lost there. But the joke is the joke. I mean, you go look it up if you want. Basically, the something about kid fucking a grandma, and that's the joke. Like, how do you like it when it's your mom,
dad?
That
sounds bad, because now
the joke is bad. It's a really weird joke.
It was a weird joke.
It was a weird joke.
What was that?
Yeah, because it's like a really, like, you think it's going to go somewhere else. Because what is the joke? It's something like, kid walks in on a dad and mom, and they're fucking.
Yeah.
And the kid's like, oh... And then the dad talks to his son, and then the dad hears noise from his mother's room, like the grandma's room, opens the door, and there's little Jorgen, like, going hard at grandma, and the kid looks up and looks at his dad, he's like, it's not so funny when it's your mom, is it? And then, like, end of the joke. I just told it in, like, a minute at most. They take, like, 15 to tell this joke.
Yeah.
They take a long time to tell this joke.
Must have felt like 15 to you. The scene itself was, like, 3 minutes.
It felt
two,
really
2:45.
It just felt so long to me. And I'm like, what is this? And then it just didn't, I don't know, like, there's got to be other jokes out there where it's, like, kid walks in on parents having sex, and there's just a better punchline than the kid proceeds to be like, I'm gonna fuck my own grandma.
Yeah.
Like, fuck
Sweet Home Alabama there.
I mean, if she's my grandmother, who's my grandfather? Isn't it obvious? You are.
But perhaps they deserve it. They fall into a crevasse and are like, oh no, we're gonna die. And they look up, or look down, I guess, and underneath the ice is the spaceship that you see in that matte painting that we all just drooled over in our previous episode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, if you're a big fan of the original movie, my first thought is like, wait a minute, it wasn't under the ice. Like, would they dig it up?
Yeah.
You know? Which we get to later how that happens, but it's a little weird. It's under the ice. And then the thing, you know, burns into the screen. Which, by the way, speaking of that 50s movie, that is actually from the 50s movie. That wasn't a Carpenter thing. Like, it does do the burn-in thing in the original. It just goes like the thing, and it's just like from outer space or another world or something like that. So it's cool that that's held itself over for this long. And then, yeah, we cut to, I think it's Colorado.
Yeah, and Ramona's, you know, just hanging out, jamming to some music, and she's working on this, like, Siberian, like,
bear.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and so she's just, like, examining it or whatever, and she, is it, gets a phone call or, not a phone call.
No, her buddy comes in.
No, yeah, her buddy comes. Huh?
I don't know his real name. What is his fucking name? Adam.
Adam. He comes in and he's basically just like, hey, we like need you to work on this thing, but doesn't tell her really like what it is.
This guy will tell you more. And then in comes.
Yeah. And so she's like, yeah, sure. I'll like join in on this. And it kind of cuts to.
Well, wait a minute, because I have to gripe now.
Okay. Sorry.
So. Dr. Halvorsen comes in and is just this huge douchebag.
Yeah.
Like, from the get-go, this guy is an ass. And this bothered me because I think this is where, like, we start having that bit we were talking about a few minutes ago where we're starting to develop character dynamics, but it's just, like, so cartoonishly over the top. Like, I've met professors who were like that. I've met people who were like that. Like, when I was in grad school shit, there were plenty of people who were like this guy. But it is just so comedic. Like, those people were not like this. There was, like, some subtlety to their arrogance. This dude is just, like... First off, I don't know what Dr. Halvorsen is a doctor of. I assume biology in, like, a really broad strokes. But he's obviously not a paleontologist because he wouldn't need Ramona to do this.
Yeah.
Because her whole thing is pulling shit out of the ice.
Yeah.
Prehistoric animals out of the ice and analyzing them. And then he's just like, I need you to do this for me. I can't tell you about it. And she's like, well, I got to know something about it. And he's like, it's in Antarctica. And she's like, okay, that tracks. And then he's like, there's a structure. And she's just like, a structure. And this is where I'm like, you know... I deal with the exact opposite, Ramona. I deal with, oh man, how many dinosaurs have you dug up, Thomas? And I'm like, hey, fuck you. I don't dig up dinosaurs.
We don't do that here.
This girl's like a structure. And the way she delivers this line is like, why the hell would I give a shit about this?
Yeah.
Like, why are you talking to me? And then he's like, and a specimen.
Yeah.
And all I can think is like, why didn't you lead with that? Why are you bringing up structures at all? Just be like, I have a specimen in Antarctica. I need you to come dig it up for me. She's going to be like, oh, okay. It's like, it's never, just say it's an undiscovered species.
Yeah.
And like, she'd just be like, okay, cool. And like, you start this movie like that and you have so much more like we're talking about slow burns, guys, right? You have so much more room to burn. She doesn't even fucking know this is something weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh, it's an animal. It's a bear. I don't fucking know. But they also firmly plant this movie in the 80s. She's got her Walkman on. She's listening to... I don't remember what she's listening to.
I have no idea.
It's a very famous song. Because I remember the first time going, would this actually happen in 1982? And I like look it up and I'm like, yeah, it came out. I think it came out like in 1982. But yeah. And so she agrees and she goes with Adam and Dr. Douchebag to Antarctica.
That's good.
Immediately. They do. I'm tired of saying Halvorsen. Like they do, like Amber said, they hard cut to, or suddenly we're on a helicopter in Antarctica.
Yeah, and they're already basically at the site. Cut to like the spaceship, and she's like, "Whoa, this is like," because they go into kind of like an underground,
little tunnel.
Yeah,
which wasn't in the. That wasn't in the other movie.
Exactly, it wasn't covered like that, but. I digress. And then this is where they actually show the specimen. It's in the ice, and so obviously they have to cut it out, which they don't show that part, because then it pops over to the facility, and they've already cut it.
Yeah,
and
just perfectly out of the ice. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is the part that also, like, I have gripes about. So when they're drilling to get a sample from it, they're like, okay, we need to get a sample from this, like, specimen. But how do we do that? It's in a frozen block of ice.
They look at Ramona and they're like, hey, this is what you're here for. How do we do this? And she's like, well, we can't do it here. And he's like, I want a tissue sample, said Dr. Douchebag. Like, make it happen.
Pretty much like that, yeah.
That's kind of what he says.
Yeah.
It was also interesting that they went through the tunnel and checked out the ship, but then when they recovered the body, it was actually out on the surface. So they kind of like take her down and tour her to the ship, but then they go back to the surface to get the body.
Yeah.
And I don't have gripes about that, actually, because one, that's how it happened in the original movie, the OG 50s movie, that it's like it crawled out.
Yeah.
But also, like, not to sort of like contradict myself, but like, any dig I've been on, like in archaeology, one of the first things you do is you just tour the whole fucking site.
Yeah.
Like you go there and like, so yeah, you would go look at the ship and stuff, but then like you kind of end where you're going to be.
Yeah.
Because that's where you're going to have to spend the most time. So like,
makes sense.
Like he asks her like, oh, how long would it take you to get? She says it'd take like the better part of a day or something like that. So like, obviously it doesn't happen that day. And we just kind of time jump to when it's already over. So I think there's like some pacing problem here where it's like, oh, it'll take like most of a day because that's what realistically it would take.
Yeah.
But then like the viewer doesn't want to watch them cut this thing out of the ice.
Yeah.
Which ironically they have tools to cut things out of the ice, but they don't have the tools to get a tissue sample.
Yeah. And instead, they just use some power drill.
This made me
which
crazy.
I'm like, this is like the worst idea ever, because I'm sure you could crack the ice and like you don't want to do that right. just yet. Like you don't want to. Yeah. So it's not like she's going to like work on the specimen like right away, obviously. And so they just drill it in. And of course, it like kind of splits and like it just kind of goes through really fast.
Stabs the
thing. Basically stabs it. And they get their sample, but I feel like they never really do anything with it, if I'm correct. Like, they take it, but... Later.
He looks at it under the microscope, Dr. Douchebag comments on how how intricate and basically sophisticated, like, the cellular structure of it is.
I think Adam later sees... No, Kate later sees it still alive, right? Like, using that
she
sample?
She does, yeah.
Oh,
the cells later. I will say also, to their credit, they do discuss the issue of cracking the ice, and they one of the characters, he mentions the density of it and how he has reasonable confidence that that will prevent it from fracturing and that they could like drill straight through.
Yeah.
I guess it's just like, in my mind, it doesn't make any sense. Like, Dr. Douchebag is like, his whole point in this movie is, I have the find of the century. This is like, it's all about him. He's super selfish.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is going to make my career.
Mm-hmm.
Bruh. Wait till you have the right tools.
Yeah, like, just have them flown in from a helicopter.
Yeah. Like, get a high RPM drill, probably something with gas power, like actual pressure gas power. And you can just zip into that thing and pop that shit out. Like, no problem. Instead, you take what I think was like a cordless power drill. Maybe it had a cord, I don't remember. But either way, it's just like this power drill with this long-ass fucking bit on it. And you're just, I mean, I'm sure the frame rate
is like a masonry bit,
Yeah, and it's just like drilling into it. And I'm like, bro, this is making me cringe so hard. Because all I could think is like, it's just going to crack. Like, it's just going to crack the ice. And it doesn't quite do that. But like Amber said, it slips and jabs.
He couldn't even wait for their instruments to be sterilized. That's the main thing Kate was harping on, was that none of their stuff was sterilized. All they could have done, all they had to do was like have some isopropyl alcohol or heat or both and do that. But he couldn't even wait for that. And how are you going to bring somebody on your expedition and just ignore that kind of advice when that's like the field they were specifically brought there for?
Dude, you are preaching to the choir on that one. So immediately after this, Dr. Douchebag decides to give a very classic grad school or grad student grilling of Ramona Flowers here. And it is, I'm just like cringing at a lot of that because it's just so fucking like, I don't know. It, like you said, Gio, you brought her here to do this. You clearly don't have the skills to do it yourself. Otherwise, why the fuck is she here? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, he's like, don't ever contradict me in front of these people again. Like, know your place, just shut up and do your job. And I'm like, okay, but all she's done so far is say, A, It'll take me like the better part of a day to drill this thing out of the ice. And as far as contributions that have been acted upon goes, that's all you've had her do. She told you, like, you need to have it sterilized. You need to have a better tools. We don't have the equipment for this. Mm-hmm. You could just wait for the equipment and some alcohol, which you clearly have because you have a fucking lab here. Yeah. There's no way you don't just have, like, some fucking disinfecting alcohol or something. Instead, you just, like, go for it. Like, why did you even fly this woman in? Like, this is dumb. Like,
yeah.
I think it would have been better if maybe they had, like, actual... Like, build that tension a little bit more to where, like, maybe the Norwegian guys, like, do know that she is an expert in this and this guy is not an expert in this. And, like, they maybe kind of doubt it. Like, that's one of the things I think is a problem with the dynamic here is, like, Dr. Douchebag says stuff that's dumb. And, like, you think everybody in the room would know it's dumb. And then Kate calls him out on it. And no one reacts to this. Like, oh, yeah, she said the right thing. We should do that. They're just like, no, whatever. I'll just drill. I don't fucking care. And I'm just like, dude, what the fuck? Like, what is this?
Why are you the way that you are?
But then they have a party. And they're all drinking and singing Norwegian songs. This is a good time. Like, everyone's having a good... And they weirdly make their rec room look like the one from the Carpenter film. Like, it kind of freaks me out a little bit how eerily similar they are. I mean, I guess maybe they're like prefab buildings and they just look the same.
That was actually something I was going to comment on, is how, like, I felt like the set design felt very consistent from the first film.
And you know what the weirdest thing about that is? Is, like, so I did a little bit of research this week before we recorded here today. And, like, one of the things that they actually did for this movie, which I found shocking as far as attention to detail goes, is I guess, like, by 2011, there were so many fans of this movie that they had actually made, like, people had rendered out maps of the Norwegian compound already on the internet.
Oh, that's so cool.
Right. And, like, so the filmmakers, when they were building the set, they took the scenes from the original film and based everything on Kurt Russell's height and just built things according to the set. Like, they recreated the set but not burnt out. And then using these, like, fan-rendered maps, they just constructed the rest of the site, or of the camp from those.
That's cool. So cool.
It's so awesome. But it's weird to me that it looks so much like the American one, which leads me to believe they must just be, like, prefab buildings or something that they just brought in, planted them, and then, like, it doesn't matter what country you're from, you just, that's what you have. You just have these buildings. Because, like, it's just so weird that they all look the same.
That's kind of what I assumed, that they were, like, all, like, generic buildings.
Yeah, and the Norwegians bought them.
All kind of
the
same.
Yeah, like, they bought them.
Modular to some extent.
Yeah. And then you just have, you know, your standard rec room that's probably just the one that's hooked up with, like, a bar, like a wet bar, and then maybe some electricity. It's not a bedroom. But yeah, so they throw a party, and during the party, shit gets real. Because his name is James Jameson, and I'm not even going to attempt to say this man's name, but you may know him from such films as The Mummy Returns, where he played the sort of number one sword guy for the bad guys.
Yeah, but he's token black dude in this film.
Token black dude in this film, absolutely. He's one of the helicopter pilots, and he decides that he's going to go look at the ice monster while everyone's partying, and he's just kind of staring at it. And I think, you know, this is why, Gio, I think this is one of the reasons why it's almost comical what you were saying before, because they bumper this like a joke, because he's staring at it and it's quiet and it's dead silent and he's alone in the shed. And then, like, some random fucker comes in and just, like, bah! And, like,
yells,
scares
behind
him.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, man, you scared me. Like, fuck you, whatever. And then he turns. Other guy leaves. And there is no fucking way other guy got far enough away to not hear this. But the thing, kadoosh, bursts from the ice and, like, flies through the ceiling off into the night. And
it wouldn't have been quite as bad if there was more time between the two events. But it still would have been good. Just the busting out of the ice, It feels too disjointed from the creature's MO from the original. It just, the one in this, without getting too far ahead, it just does everything out in the open, and it really forgoes a lot of the subterfuge from the first film.
Which is apparently one of those producer notes I saw online, is that they wanted this movie to be a lot more like, I don't want to say action-y, but they wanted a lot more like the Creature Kills type things, which I think in a film like this takes away from the point of that subterfuge and mistrust between everybody. And like,
absolutely.
It just kind of destroys it because everybody's a monster.
Yeah.
You know, and in this movie, they're all gray, pink nothings running around.
Yeah.
Screaming.
And in the last one, like, even MacReady's like, this creature doesn't want to be seen. It wants to stay hidden. And And so that's like the one thing that is missing from, I guess, like this movie, is the fact that the creature's so like out in the open, just like kind of doing whatever. And like, even though that's, again, like Gio said, not its MO at all in the last one.
And I mean, we'll get there pretty soon why that's just so fucking doesn't make any damn sense. And the first reveal of the creature after this, but it bursts forth and he runs into the bar and he yells, "The thing's alive." And everybody's like, "Haha, you've had too much to drink." Which, again, you're bumpering this whole thing with jokes. And it's just like, no, guys, this really fucking... He's like, "Man, I'm not fucking around. This thing's alive." And if there's one thing I can credit this movie, is at least they don't sit there and debate him for any longer than two of these. Like, even if they don't believe him, they're at least willing to be like, "Hey, look, this guy's, he's disturbed and there's something happened that bothered him. Let's just go fucking check this out." They all run down the hallway and lo and behold, the ceiling's ripped open, the ice is burst open, just like it was in the 82 film. And then they're like, "We gotta find this thing." So they go looking for it. Dr. Douchebag's obviously like, "Well, we can't kill it. Don't kill it. We can't do that." Which is a callback to the 50s movie. Like, the scientist in that film, the whole issue is that he won't let the strong B-movie hero guy kill the monster. He's like, "No, we have to save it. It's a living thing." And that's where I like that one over this, because in this, Dr. Douchebag is just very self-centered about it. He's like, from the get-go, he's like, "This is the greatest scientific find ever on Earth. I don't care about anything else. We got to make sure it survives." Whereas in the other movie, they try to kind of like cover it up with like, "This is a living thing and we need to like first try to communicate with it," like a very Star Trekian kind of approach. Like, they're like, "We can't just kill this thing. Like, it doesn't know where it is. It's just lashing out and killing people because we're a threat to it. But like, well, let's try to communicate with it." I'm not going to spoil the other movie, but it's a B movie, so I'm sure you guys, from the 50s, I'm sure you guys can figure out who wins that argument in the end. But in this one, if it had that thin layer, I think it would have been a little bit more believable, because like, okay, Dr. Guy is trying to hide his own selfishness, at least under some pseudo altruistic bullshit. But he's just like, "No, we gotta save it, because..."
He's so also important. Hammering this home at the most insensitive possible times, too.
Exactly. It's not like even
very,
like,
very shortly after this part.
It is. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. I remember what you're talking about now. Yeah. So they find the thing, which is probably the only bit of practical effects in the whole movie, right?
Yeah.
Under the
well, only two of the guys find it.
Yeah, the two of the guys find it, but one of them gets killed.
Yeah.
Which this baffled me. I said this when we watched it. Was like, why did it just stab him?
I know.
And you're like, it's assimilating. I'm like, it didn't do that in the other movies. It kind of would grab you and pull you in.
Yeah.
But in this, it just like shanks him through the chest, rips him under the thing. Lars or whoever starts screaming. And then everybody comes and Joel Edgerton, you know, Uncle Owen is like shooting it.
Yeah.
And they just kind of keep shooting it. And then I think at some point, like, Dr. Douchebag's like, "No, stop, please don't." And they're like, "Shoot him! Fuck you." And they keep shooting the thing. They burn a whole building down.
Yeah.
Unlike in the first movie where they were like prepared, like they're like, "Hey, we lit something on fire. We can't just keep letting things burn." So they have like the extinguishers ready to go. In this movie, they're just like, torch it. And they just stand and watch this fucker burn and the building burn. And they're like, "This is fine. Who gives a fuck? It's dead." And then this is, I think, where Gio, the insensitive stuff starts, right? Because they're dissecting the creature. And he's like, "It is the..." Well, Amber, take it away. They're dissecting this fucking thing, and all this is...
Yeah, and of course, yeah. This is where they start to learn about, like, the creature and kind of get an idea of, like, well, at least Ramona kind of gets an idea of, like, what this creature does, which is the assimilation, right? And so they find the body of the guy in the creature's, like, belly or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like, what is it doing to him? And, like, why is it, like, why is the tissue so new?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Dr. Douchebag is like, oh, it was digesting him. And Everybody's like, okay.
Guess so.
Yeah. And then they also find a plate. Yeah. Which I guess was used to be in his arm because he broke his arm at some point way before mm-hmm. the movie. And they find it outside of his body.
Mm-hmm.
And Ramona's like, hey, why is this like here? Shouldn't it be in his arm? And nobody has like any explanation for it.
Yeah, we get like a musical sting. Yeah, we get like a musical sting and then it cuts.
This was actually one of my favorite things about this movie.
I was going to say something similar.
How it took this theme and elaborated on it.
I thought I was going to have a hot take with this one, but maybe not. At least got one person in the room with me. I kind of like their approach to discovering that the thing assimilates people and whatnot better than the Carpenter one.
Yeah.
Because that was one of my complaints, was Wilford Brimley was just like, see that? That's not a dog. It's an imitation. How do I know this? I just cut it open and I was like, look at that shit. There's a dog in there. Even though this thing was actively eating the dogs, you're just like, eh, it's an imitation. In this movie, they take the approach I think any sane person would fucking think is like, oh, it's clearly eating him. There he is. He's like sort of being processed, right? Mm-hmm. And then she finds that the metal plate. And it's just like, oh, like, that's... Everyone's like, we don't have an explanation for this, because how would that get outside his body?
Yeah.
But it's also
asks what it is at first, and one of his teammates elaborates that how he broke his arm the year before, and he had a plate there.
Which is a great use of the other characters in this movie, because as you guys have noticed, we've talked about maybe, like, 4 people out of a cast of, like, 12, like, people in this film that kind of, a lot of them don't really do anything. They're just, like, thing fodder for a lot of this film.
Yeah, they really are. There's a lot of, like, extras.
And the thing is, they're, like, credited named characters. They should have something to do. We don't even know why half these people are here. They just seem like they're minions to the boss of this base, who is not Dr. Douchebag. He's the other guy. Like, Peter or something like that. And they just follow his orders. They just do random things like fetching and driving and things of that nature. But yeah, that's the insensitive comment though, is when Dr. Douchebag's cutting up the monster, he sees the body of their buddy and he's like, oh, it's fascinating though. Like, it's truly fascinating. And like before, everything with Dr. Douchebag in this movie pisses me off because it's always the most awkward fucking delivery of every line. Before there's even a chance for anyone to react to his insensitive comment. Like, the camera doesn't turn away and show someone like shows maybe Ramona like kind of cringe at it or something. He just goes, it is fascinating, isn't it? It is fascinating. It's very fascinating,
like,
right?
Looking around the whole room like commanding them to believe it.
You guys got me, right? Like, you got me on this. This is totally fascinating, right? Everyone's just like, okay. And they just continue. And then they get into like, what's this plate? And they just kind of gloss over that and move on. I hate Dr. Douchebag couldn't get out of this movie fast enough, and it's a shame how long he's in this movie. And I hate the way they use him at the end when we get there. But, yeah. So, this is where the movie tries to be clever, like the first one, and start seemingly showing you people getting infected, which I think this movie's easier to follow the line of infection than the Carpenter film. That doesn't mean it's a good thing, but it's a lot more like obtuse about who's infected and whatnot. And so first you get like a woman, the only other female character who's just some reason at this space.
Well, before that, Ramona and the grad student for Dr. Douchebag.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so this is the part where we get the microscope scene to where they're looking at Henrik's tissue or the tissue that they found. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they look at, or Ramona's looking at it and she's seeing that these alien cells are like replicating like his cells. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh my God. And grad student's like, oh my God, like, is this exactly like what I'm seeing? And she's like, yeah, they're replicating him. And that's where you get like, yeah, this is what the creature does. Like,
which makes a lot more sense than Wilfred Brimley's weird cartoon thing.
Yeah. Because that's actually seeing.
Yeah, we're actually looking at it. It's like, clearly you have the technology to just be looking at these cells. Mm-hmm. Why did we have to see some like shitty 8-bit render of this on a computer?
Yeah.
Like, I never understood that. Unless they just want to show off that they could do this with a computer or something. I don't know. Like, it's, people at the time wouldn't believe it.
It's kind of like the questions and simulations and the Nostromo and Alien too. Like, they're kind of there for convenience. And it doesn't make sense how this computer would have the information to answer these questions anyway.
Yeah.
Or like the power to do it. Like, I just don't see like this Commodore 64 thing like able to process this information and be like, oh, okay, if everybody on Earth, like, they do that, it's going to be infected. Like, all that stuff. I like...
Doesn't have the data.
Right. There's, where is he getting all this shit from? You had a whole computer devoted to playing chess in the first in the beginning of that other movie, and then this one can just, like, compute, like, it's Plague Inc. or something like that? Like, I doubt this. I doubt this a lot. But, yeah, I have to say the approach to... like the science of the thing and how they discover it in this movie, I think might be more well handled. And it makes sense because in the other movie, it wasn't focused on it. Like the other movie was very much focused on that, you know, mistrust and subterfuge of the thing. And like, you don't really have to care how it does its thing. You just need to know that it does and that it's bad. Whereas in this one, they at least tried to go, hey, you already know it can do this thing, but they don't. So let's try to like, go there, because what's the point of that? How, if they don't know it's taking you out of it? I understand. But then she tries to flag down the helicopter because one of the guys is sick. So,
well, she tries to, okay, so we're skipping a few scenes here. It's okay. But so as a result of this like newfound like revelation or whatever, she tries to explain this to the crew, which of course Dr. Douchebag is like, that's what you're seeing is not real. This, and everybody else is kind of like, whatever. And he's taking it more as like she's trying to ruin everything for him, because of course he's all about, this will get me like some popularity fame.
It doesn't make any sense, because they're arguing about the helicopter people going to McMurdo Station and basically telling everybody they have an alien.
Yeah.
And he's like, you can't do that. Don't do that. And then in comes Ramona saying, for real, don't do that. There's a problem. Mm-hmm. And instead of being like, this is a great maniacal way to like manipulate the group into believing what I want to do, he goes, oh no, Ramona said that? Fuck that shit. No, you better get your asses to McMurdo Station. Like, fuck you guys. And I'm just like, what is your plot, Dr. Douchebag?
Yeah.
This would have been perfect. But are you just like that much of a misogynist that your other super big character trait of selfishness just like doesn't matter anymore?
Yeah.
So egotistical, he reversed psychology himself.
Congratulations. You played yourself.
It drove me nuts because I'm like, why would you say no? She's telling them, she's giving them a reason. All you need to do is agree with her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I get it. That's supposed to be their tension, but it is so dumb and it is so pointless. Because then, yeah, she goes to the bathroom and she finds a ton of blood in the shower and some metal fillings on the ground. And she goes to flag down the helicopter and it's got Uncle Owen, the guy from The Mummy Returns, are driving it. And then you have this other guy who he's kind of like the Norris of this movie. He's just like there.
Yeah. I mean, he's the one who witnessed the other guy's death, Henrik.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that's why he's being taken to like a nearby hospital or whatever. Well, because he's sick. Traumatized.
That guy's sick. There's another guy in the helicopter. There's two people in the helicopter that aren't pilots. There's the guy. Yeah,
there's the one that was traumatized because he saw that guy basically getting killed by the alien, and then the other guy.
The other guy's
just there. Yeah.
Yeah, he's just there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that they were taking him to the hospital because he was basically so traumatized and like having a breakdown. Yeah,
they were. He had low blood pressure. Like he had actual physical complications from it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because I was wondering if that was actually going to be revealed as like a symptom of early infection or something, but it seems like ultimately it wasn't.
I thought he was going to end up being.
I know.
And that's. I feel like that would have been a better payoff because they clearly try to like, they try to undermine your expectations here because it's not him. It's not the guy who's clearly sick.
I liked that, actually.
Good.
I liked that it wasn't him, actually.
Yeah, I did, too.
I would have if it made any sense, because there's no reason for the thing to reveal itself here, unless for some reason it can't control itself, which I don't understand why that would be a thing. That'd be a new thing. In the other movie and in this so far, it's been a person and been fine. But
that was a problem with this movie going forward, was the reveal of this one here.
Yeah, like, I think this is the moment where this movie jumps back to 100 and keeps going full steam ahead, and it doesn't give a shit about itself anymore. Like, it's just, like, everything that happens, happens because the plot needs to move forward. Mm-hmm. Like, they redo the test thing, kind of like from the first movie, but it's like, random as fuck. Like, it's just like, oh, they burned the lab down. It's like, who did it? Who cares? Just keep going with the movie. Like, whatever. And so the thing reveals itself on the helicopter for, like, no reason. It just does. And it, because they're turning around. Kate's like, we gotta get down. And the thing is like, oh, no. Fuck it. And just, like, kills everybody on the helicopter. Well, you think it kills everybody on the helicopter. It crashes off in the distance. And everyone's like, oh, fuck, that sucks. That's shitty. And they have this whole meeting again, and she's like, I found these molars or these fillings in the bathroom. Someone's the thing. You figure it out. And you get the lady is a thing. Right?
Yeah, who was the wife, I think, of Henrik. Because she's really not. I mean, she doesn't do anything. Like, that's the only thing.
Yeah.
Like, only reason why she's there.
She cried once.
Yeah, and then, exactly. But she ends up being the thing.
Yeah, this was clever. Yeah. I thought this was kind of clever. Was she goes, oh, I think it's this evil-looking guy. It's this evil-looking guy over here. And she's like, oh, and he's like, I saw him near the snow cats. We should go check the snow cats. And she's like, I'll help you go get the keys. And I thought this was cool because we're actively watching the thing trick her.
Yeah.
And it takes her into this, like, room where they keep equipment, and she's digging for shit. And then she's like, how many keys did you say there were? And it's, like, dead silent. You start hearing, like, this, and she, like Kate looks up, turns around, is just like, oh, fuck. And you have, like, the woman, like, doing the scream, and her body's, like, elongating. Yeah. I think she has, like, a mouth on her belly, too, or something like that.
Yeah.
And a big lobster claw, and this is where the creature stuff starts really kicking it in high gear, because we just kind of like watch Ramona run away from this thing, and then she's like, oh my God, and like runs away, and then Adam and the doctor of the camp are in the hallway, and she's like, run, like it's coming, and Adam like leaves with her, and then like the doctor's
no,
like,
Adam's
what?
Not there at all.
Is it not Adam? Is it somebody
no,
else?
No, it's just the doctor guy.
Oh, it's the doctor?
Just, yeah.
Because the doctor's like, what? And turns, sees this thing gunning for him.
She runs past someone else too, and then they can't register what she's saying in time, and then she ends up getting them.
The lady thing just like stabs the doctor, Dr. Douchebag, the like medical
guy
doctor.
With the glasses.
Yeah, glasses guy just shanks him through the chest. He's dead. They're all like, oh my God, like watching through a window or something. And is she the one they torch with the stove?
Yes.
Because that was clever too, because they kick her into the stove or something, and it just torches her like she's on fire. And this thing has the wherewithal to, like, yank the grease fire release thing, which I thought was cool as shit, because, like, she yanks it and it starts to, you know, extinguish the fire, and they're like, oh, fuck. And then I think they hit her with a flamethrower or something to, like, finish her off. And I'm like, there's some subtle shit in this film that's awesome. Like, subtle stuff like that to show this thing is intelligent. It's not just some, like, slasher monster. And it's like, this thing not only assimilates the person, the way they look, but it seems to assimilate, like, what they know. Like, how would the thing know that that's going to extinguish the fire, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was cool.
Yeah.
I like
it. And same thing with, like, the, before she turned into the thing, the woman saying, like, oh, there should be five keys. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if it was five or four, but, like,
five.
That's something that she would have known.
Right. And it's, like, either, and that either, no matter how you cut it, that's clever. Right? She's, like, I only found three. And it's, like, if she knows that either there are five keys, or if she says more than three, she'll keep looking, and it buys her time. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like... Mm-hmm. These little things are so brilliant. Why did this movie happen the way it did? Like, yeah. Oh my God. So that is going to do it for our part one of The Thing 2011. Decided to break this one up into two parts because it is super long. We talk a lot about this movie, even more than the first one, funny enough. And we got a lot more coming. So next week, check out part two. And until then, I am one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
I'm Allie.
And I'm Gio.
And this is So What Happens Next, Small Screens. We'll see you guys next week.
Spend the rest of this winter tied to this fucking couch!